This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present Live and Let Chai by Bree Baker. Narrated by Therese Plummer. Chapter 1. Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea. I perked up at the precocious sound of seashell wind chimes bouncing and tinkling against the front door of my new cafe. I'll be right with you. A pair of ladies in windbreakers and capri pants smoothed their windblown hair and examined the seating options. Sounds of the sea had followed them inside, amplified briefly by the opening door. I bopped my head to a temptation song and tapped the large sweet tea jug behind the counter. Until 3 months ago, owning and operating an iced tea shop on the shore of my hometown had been nothing more than a childish dream. I'd thought being a grown-up meant working a job I hated while wearing uncomfortable clothes, so I toed the line for a while. But my looming 30th birthday and a broken heart had changed all that. Now I did what I wanted, in comfy clothes, for significantly less money. But at least I could wear flip-flops. I set a lidless canning jar of old-fashioned sun tea in front of the man sitting at my counter and beamed. "Let me know if I can fix you anything else, Sam." He frowned at his phone, too engrossed or distracted to answer. Sam Smart was a local real estate agent. He'd arrived in Charm during the years I'd been away from home. And from what I could tell, he was a type A, all-stress, all-day kind of guy. A little sweet tea was probably just what he needed. I nudged the jar closer until his hand swept out to meet it.
"Thanks."
"Everything okay?" I asked. He flicked his gaze to mine, then back to his phone.
"It's pain."
He shook his head and groaned. "Ah." I grabbed a thin stack of napkins and patted Sam's shoulder on my way to welcome the newcomers. "Good luck with that." Benedict Payne had been a thorn in my side since the day I'd approached our town council about adding a cafe to the first floor of my new seaside home. Owning a sweet tea shop was my dream come true. And honestly, I couldn't afford the house's mortgage payments without the business income. Despite the home's fixer-upper condition, the price tag had been astronomical, making the cafe a must. And Mr. Payne had fought me the entire way, complaining that adding a business to a residential property would drag down the neighborhood. I could only imagine the kind of headache a man like Payne could cause a real estate agent. The space that was now my cafe stretched through the entire south side of the first floor. Walls had been strategically knocked out, opening the kitchen and formal dining area up to a large space for entertaining. The result was a stunning seaside setup, perfect for my shop. From the kitchen, a private hallway led to the rest of the first floor and another 1,000 or so square feet of potential expansion space. A staircase off that hall provided passage to my second floor living quarters, which were just as big and full of potential. The stairs themselves were amazing, stained a faded red with delicate carvings along the edges. They were mine alone to enjoy, shut off from the cafe by a locking door. I could probably thank the home's history as a boarding house for my substantial second floor kitchen. The cabinets and fixtures were all older than me. But I couldn't complain. The cafe kitchen was what mattered, and it was fantastic. Seating at Sun, Sand, and Tea was a hodgepodge of repainted garage sale and thrift shop finds. 20 seats in total, 5 at the counter and 15 scattered across the wide planked, whitewashed floor, ranging from padded wicker numbers with low tables to tall bistro sets along the perimeter. The ladies had selected a high table near a wall of windows overlooking my deck. I refreshed my smile and set a napkin in front of each of them. "Hello. Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea." They dragged their attention slowly away from the rolling waves and driftwood-speckled beach beyond the glass, reluctant to part with the amazing view for even a second. "Can I get something started for you?" The taller woman settled tortoise-shell glasses onto the ridge of her sunburned nose and fixed her attention to the cafe menu, scripted on an enormous blackboard covering the far wall. "Do you really make 20 flavors of iced tea?" "Yes, ma'am. Plus a daily array of desserts and finger foods." The selection changed without notice, sometimes with the tide, depending on if I ran out of any necessary ingredients. "Fascinating." I came in for some good old-fashioned sweet tea, but now you've got me wondering about the country cranberry hibiscus. What's in that? She leaned her elbows on the tabletop and twined her fingers. Well, there's black tea, hibiscus, and, rose hips and cranberries. I stammered over the answer to her question the same way I had to similar inquiries on a near-daily basis since opening my cafe doors. It seemed a fine line between serving my family secret recipes and sharing them ingredient by ingredient. The woman glanced out the window again and pressed a palm to her collarbone as a massive gull flapped to a stop on the handrail outside the window. Dear! Oh, there's Lou, I said. Lou? I think he came with the house. She lowered her hand but kept one eye on Lou. I'll try the cranberry hibiscus, she said. What about you, Margot? Her friend pursed her lips. Make mine summer citrus mint, and I'd like to try your crisp cucumber sandwich. I formed an okay sign with my fingers and winked. Give me just a quick minute, and I'll get that over here for you. I strode back to the counter, practically vibrating with excitement. After only a month in business, each customer's order was still a thrill for me. The seashell wind chimes kicked into gear again, and I responded on instinct. Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea. I turned on my toes for a look at the newest guest, and my stomach dropped. Oh, hello, Mr. Payne. I shot a warning look at Sam, whose head drooped lower over his tea.
Miss Swan?
Mr. Payne straddled a stool 3 seats down from Sam and set his straw pork pie hat on the counter. Tufts of white hair stretched east and west from the spaces below his bald spot and above each ear.
Lovely day.
I nodded in acknowledgement. Can I get you anything?
Please,
he drawled, giving Sam a thorough once-over. It wasn't clear if he already knew Sam was mad at him, or if he was figuring that out from the silent treatment. I waited, knowing what the next words out of Mr. Payne's mouth were going to be. Reluctantly, he pulled his attention back to me.
How about a list of all your ingredients?
Sam rolled his small brown eyes, but otherwise continued to ignore Mr. Payne's presence. I grabbed a knife and a loaf of fresh-baked bread and set them on the counter. You know I can't give that to you, Mr. Payne. Something else, perhaps? I'd been through this a dozen times with him since Sun, Sand, and Tea's soft opening. Swan women had guarded our tea recipes for 100 years, and I wasn't about to hand them over just because he said so. How about a glass of tea instead? I cut 2 thin slices from the loaf, then whacked the crusts off with unnecessary oomph. Sam took a long pull on his drink, stopping only when there was nothing left but ice, and returned the jar to the counter with a thump.
It's very good, he said, turning to stare at Mr. Payne. You should try it. I mean, if you'd had it your way, this place wouldn't even be open, right? Seems like the least you can do is find out what you were protesting.
I didn't bother to mention that Mr. Payne had already tried basically every item on the menu, as I plied him with free samples to try to get in his good graces. Mr. Payne frowned, first at Sam, then at me. Wrinkles raced across his pale, sun-spotted face.
It's a health and safety issue, he groused. People need to know what they're drinking.
Yes, I arranged cucumber slices on one piece of bread. I believe you've mentioned that. It had, in fact, been his number one argument since I'd gotten the green light to open. I'm happy to provide a general list of ingredients for each recipe, but there are certain herbs and spices, as well as brewing methods, that are trade secrets.
He doesn't care about any of that, Sam said. He just wants to get his way.
Mr. Payne twisted on his stool to glare at Sam.
Whatever your problem is, Sam Smart, it's not with me. So sew it.
Sam shoved off his stool.
And your problem isn't with her.
He grabbed the gray suit jacket from the stool beside him and threaded his arms into the sleeves.
Thanks for the tea, Everly.
He tossed a handful of dollar bills onto the counter and a remorseful look in my direction.
I worked to close my slack jaw as the front door slapped shut behind him. Whatever grudge match Sam and Mr. Payne had going, I didn't want a ticket for it. I put the unused cucumber slices away and removed a white ceramic bowl from the fridge. Mr. Payne watched carefully, teeth clenched. "Maybe you'd like to try the peach tea today," I suggested. "Whatever you want, on the house. Preferably to go."
"How much sugar is in the peach?"
he asked, apparently determined to criticize.
"You know I don't like a lot of sugar."
I pointed to a brightly colored section on my menu that highlighted sugar-free options. "How about a tea made with alternative sweeteners, like honey or fruit puree? Maybe the iced peach with ginger?" I turned to the refrigerator and pulled out a large metal bowl, then scooped the cream cheese, mayo, and seasoning mixture onto the second bread slice, turning it face down over the cucumbers. "There's no sugar in that at all."
"Fine."
He lifted his fingers in defeat, as usual, pretending to give up, but knowing full well he'd be back tomorrow with the same game. I had quit hoping he'd start paying for his orders 2 weeks ago. That was never going to happen, and I had decided to chalk the minimal expense up to community relations and let it go. Though if he kept walking off with my shop's canning jars, he'd soon have a full set, and those weren't cheap. "Great." I released a long breath and poured a jar of naturally sweetened peach tea for him. He was lucky I didn't serve it in a disposable cup.
"What's in it?"
he asked. "Peaches. Tea." I rocked my knife through the sandwich, making 4 small crustless triangles.
"And?"
Mr. Payne lifted the tea to his mouth, closed his eyes, and gulped before returning the half-empty jar to his napkin. He smacked his lips.
"Tastes like sugar."
"No," I assured him. "There's no sugar in that." I plated the crisp cucumber sandwiches, then poured the ladies' mint and cranberry teas, grateful that they were too busy ogling Lou out the window to notice the delay. "Fresh peaches, honey, ginger, lemon, and spices. That's it." I knew what my tea really tasted like to him. Defeat. He'd tried to stop me from opening Sun, Sand, and Tea because businesses on the beach were cliché and overdone. According to Mr. Payne, if I opened a cafe in my home, Charm, North Carolina would become a tourist trap and ruin everything he lived for. Fortunately, the property was old enough to have been zoned commercial before Payne's time on the town council. Built at the turn of the 19th century, my home had been a private residence at first, then a number of other businesses ranging from a boarding house to a prep school, and, if the rumors were true, possibly a brothel. Though I couldn't imagine anything so salacious ever having existed in Charm. The town was simply too charming. And according to my great aunts, who'd been fixtures here since the Great Depression, it had always been that way. The place was empty when I bought it. The previous owner lived out of town, but he'd sent a number of work crews to make renovations over the years. I could only imagine the money that had been slowly swallowed by the efforts. Eventually, it went back on the market. Mr. Payne eyeballed his drink and rocked the jar from side to side.
"I don't see why you won't provide the complete list of your ingredients. What's the big secret?"
"I'm not keeping a secret. The recipes are private. I don't want them out in the world." I wet my lips and tried another explanation, one he might better understand. "These recipes are part of my family's lineage. Our history and legacy." I let my native drawl carry the words. Payne, of all people, should appreciate an effort to keep things as they were, to respect the past. He harrumphed.
"I'm bringing the ingredient list up at our next council meeting, and I'm sure Mayor Dunfree and the other members will agree with me that it's irresponsible not to have it posted."
"Great." He never seemed to tire of reminding me how tight he was with the mayor. He'd use their relationship to the fullest while trying to keep my shop from opening. But even the mayor couldn't prevent a legitimate business from being run in a commercially zoned space. I refilled Mr. Payne's jar, which had been emptied rather quickly.
Let me know if there's anything else you'd like to try.
Mr. Payne climbed off his stool and stuffed his goofy hat back on his mostly bald head.
Just the tea,
he said with unnecessary flourish.
See ya.
I piled the lady's teas and sandwich on a tray and waved Payne off.
Try not to choke on an ice cube,
I muttered.
The afternoon ebbed and flowed in spurts of busyness and lulls of silence. I supposed that was typical of a new business in a small town. Not to mention that Sun, Sand, and Tea hadn't had its official launch yet. I was due for a big grand opening, but fear and cowardice kept me from planning it. What if no one came and the whole thing was a flop? I flipped over the closed sign promptly at 5 and went upstairs to trade my sundress for exercise gear and hunt for my track shoes. I'd gotten out of shape while I was away, loitering behind a table at culinary school in a city where I never felt completely safe, eating takeout and every meal on the run because I didn't have time to cook for myself while studying the art of haute cuisine. Now none of my clothes fit, and I wasn't happy about it. Luckily, Charm was a great place to get out and get moving, whether hiking the dunes, playing volleyball on the beach, or swimming in the warm blue ocean. I hit the boardwalk with a brisk stride. Waning sunlight glistened on the water, reflecting shadows of soaring birds and the occasional single-engine plane, and the heady scent of home hung in the air. It was the salty, beachy fragrance that clung to my skin and hair long after I'd gone inside. The humidity and seagrass, wet sand, and a hint of sunblock. I could never quite put it into words, and my attempts had been wholly lost on the friends I'd made living inland. Maybe rather than just a smell, it was a sensation you had to experience to understand, kind of like that perfect glass of iced tea. Or maybe it was just me. Some days I wasn't sure if it was sweet tea or salt water flowing in my veins. Probably a little of both. I turned away from the beach and headed through the marsh, following the wooden planks beneath my feet. Tenacious green stems poked through stringy bundles of dead seagrass. Spring in Charm was lovely, but soon everything would be in bloom, lush and wild, the way I loved it. Too soon, the bushy marsh shrank away, revealing a glimpse of Ocean Drive, the main road in town, in the distance. I slowed at the sight of an extra-large moving truck parked across multiple spaces outside the Gas and Go. Was I no longer the newest full-time citizen of Charm? A curious thrill buzzed over my skin. Was the person with the truck new or newly returned, like me? Did I know them from my previous life here? Or was I about to meet a new friend? Booted feet moved beneath the truck's long metal belly, nearing the back corner at a clip. I nearly held my breath in anticipation. The boots arrived in full view a moment later, attached to a pair of nicely fitting jeans and 6 feet of Sirius. I gave a low whistle, and the man's head turned sharply in my direction. Keen gray eyes fixed me in place. Oh, he'd heard that? My heart raced and my cheeks burned with humiliation. I'd been caught whistling at a strange man. What was next? Catcalls from my porch? Slowly, he raised a palm in greeting. I spun on my toes and hightailed it back the way I'd come. I had far too much pride to meet a man who looked like that, while I looked like this, basted in sweat, half panting, and fully testing the integrity of my outgrown exercise gear. No way, no how, nuh-uh. I could only imagine what my crazy brown curls looked like after a couple of miles in a hasty bun. I didn't slow my pace again until the regal outline of my home came into view. Ocean winds jostled the freshly painted Sun, Sand, and Tea sign over my cobblestone walk. The place was historic, majestic, and 3 floors of much-needed repair. A wide wraparound porch welcomed guests and stretched into an elaborate deck out back. The backyard had come complete with a picket fence-wrapped garden and small greenhouse overlooking the sea. A lighthouse-like tower rose into the sky with windows on every face and the best views of the Atlantic I'd ever seen. There were decks and verandas at every turn, and I could almost see the faces of aristocrats past enjoying a party at the owner's invitation. From the rear of my home, I had a stunning eastern view of the sea, but the western-facing front of my home had a secret. There was a lovely view of the Martian boardwalk, yes, but from the front windows of the tower, I could see all the way to the bay. Unlike the other houses along the seashore, mine had a uniquely Victorian flair and sat at the northernmost tip of our island, high on a cliff, safe from vicious seasonal storms and winds that threatened the town below. The nearest homes were all more than a stone's throw away, but if the old adage was right about fences making good neighbors, then I supposed a few hundred feet or so between them worked well too. It was the perfect place to show off and make a statement. I thought wryly of whoever commissioned the masterpiece all those years ago and what they might think of a poor pastry school dropout owning the place today, serving iced tea where they'd once held grand balls. Despite the home's undeniable grandeur, the place could use a handyman. My windows needed to be replaced, along with the tile in all four bathrooms. Chipped baseboards and dinged walls made regular appearances throughout the house, and almost every step had a little squeak. The hardwood floors were in need of refinishing, and the entire place was drafty. Not to mention the shutters, fences, and exterior railings were all overdue for a fresh coat of paint. It was shabby in the best way, true, but still undeniably worn down. And I had big plans for polishing the old place up. At minimum. I couldn't even think about the hours of weeding that awaited me along the garden paths. A rustling in the weeds drew my attention, and I arced my path as far from the sound as possible without falling off the boardwalk and kept moving. The sun had set while I'd walked, leaving me in the beautiful but useless twilight, squinting against shadows in the marsh. My sincere and lifelong fear of bees was rivaled only by my fear of alligators, and I didn't want to come face to face with one if I could avoid it. Something pale and bulbous on the ground caught my eye. The object was surrounded by smashed weeds and what looked like one of my cafe's canning jars. Doomed by relentless curiosity, and willing to wash and reuse my jar if possible, I inched closer, hoping I wouldn't meet an alligator. As I crept over the bank, the mysterious shape registered with a snap. I was looking at the top of someone's bald head. I dashed forward and nearly swallowed my tongue at the sight of his face. Mr. Payne! I scrambled through crushed grass and fell to my knees at his side. Mr. Payne? I scanned the scene frantically for help. Are you hurt? I asked, patting his cool cheeks. How did a grown man fall off the boardwalk? Mr. Payne, wake up, I ordered. Open your eyes. Can you hear me? I pressed two fingers to his wrist in search of a pulse, but my own trembling hands made it impossible to locate. Hot tears swam in my eyes. Hold on, I begged, moving my hands to his neck and roving inept fingertips over his sweat-dampened skin. Still nothing. I'm going to call for help. I dug my cell phone from my pocket and dialed 911. Please not if you can hear me. I sent up 1,000 silent prayers, but Mr. Payne didn't nod. He didn't move a finger, eyelid, or lip. Something awful had happened to him, and I had no idea how to help. Chapter 2. Half the town had turned up with the emergency crews, watching suspiciously from the opposite side of some flimsy yellow caution tape. I was quarantined on the business side of said tape, seated in an ambulance's open doorway and feeling helpless, wrapped in a blanket and waiting to make my formal statement so I could leave. I tugged the itchy fabric more tightly around my shoulders and hunched lower to corral my fading body heat. The temperature had plummeted since I'd left for my walk, and relentless wind had long since dried my sweaty clothes, leaving my skin covered in goosebumps. Tea? My great-aunt Clara's voice cut through my hazy thoughts. Her long silver and blonde hair lashed her cheeks with each gust of wind, I'd called her and her sister Aunt Fran the moment I'd disconnected from the call with the emergency dispatch operator. They were my grandmother's sisters, but had functioned more like surrogate mothers than anything else. Aunt Clara moved closer, holding a serving tray loaded with disposable cups of tea in her hands. A passing EMT accepted her offering with a grateful nod.
Thank you, ma'am.
A fresh gust of wind kicked up, tossing sand and pollen into the air. Aunt Clara turned her back against the gale, protecting her serving tray and attempting to cover the cups of tea with one arm. The airy fabric of her ivory kimono and ankle-length nightgown fluttered roughly against her narrow frame. While I had been waiting to make my statement, she and Aunt Fran had been serving my tea to everyone in sight. I tried not to think of it as a massive inventory loss, but more of a civic duty, an attempt to console the anxious crowd while we waited for a miracle. Mr. Payne was down, but maybe I had been wrong. Maybe he would be okay. As if responding to my thought, the paramedics who had been diligently attending to Mr. Payne slowly reemerged from the weeds. They climbed onto the boardwalk with deep regret in their eyes. One of them lifted his palms and faced the crowd.
I'm sorry.
The night grew silent, save for a few singing frogs and the continuous lull of breaking waves. I dropped my head to hide my face and stared at my dangling feet. Mr. Payne was really gone. I'd argued with him this afternoon, and now I could never apologize. Tears rolled over my cheeks and dropped onto the sand below. A pair of brown boots marched into view, stopping in the space before my sneakers.
Miss Swan?
I raised my eyes at the sound of my name. The man from the moving truck earlier today peered down at me, a look of shock and recognition flashing in his serious eyes. He lifted the shiny silver badge hanging around his neck on a beaded chain.
I'm Detective Hayes.
Everly, I choked out, unsure what else to say. He scrutinized me.
Did you know the victim?
I found him, I said. And yes, I knew him. Did you say victim? The rusty cogs of my mind finally creaked into motion. What kind of detective are you? I glanced at the grass-lined bank where a black body bag was being loaded onto a gurney. I covered my mouth and turned away.
Tonight? Homicide.
My mouth went dry. What happened to him?
Looks like poison.
I gasped. The crowd behind me murmured. Phones lit up with fresh buzzes and dings as people texted the news to friends and family. Someone killed him? Intentionally? My chest ached as it was wrenched with grief. Detective Hayes nodded. Poison. The word rolled aimlessly in my addled mind. Murder? I whispered, trying to make the word sound logical. Are you sure? The detective flicked his attention to a white panel van as it rolled into view and parked beside the ambulance.
Preliminary evidence suggests it. We'll know more soon. Meanwhile, I'm going to ask you to accompany me to the police station. I need a written statement from you, and I'd like to ask you a few questions as well. I'd like to hear the details of the argument you had with the victim today.
I leaned away from him. He said, statement, but it sounded suspiciously like confession. Panic welled in my chest. I wasn't sure which was more horrifying. The fact that the detective thought there was a murderer in our little town, or that he might think it was me. I swiveled my head in search of my great aunts. Both were already moving in my direction, having handed off the trays of my tea samples to a pair of women who appeared as shocked as myself. They had clearly heard Detective Hayes' request. The aunts shoved past a line of local policemen.
Excuse us, Clara implored, begging their pardon with her signature touch of sweetness.
Move it,
Fran demanded in her typical no-nonsense style. Their flowing gowns and long, sleek hair streamed behind them like superhero capes, and their protective eyes were locked on me.
Darling, Clara patted my cheek and wrapped a bony arm around my shoulders. This will be fine. I'm sure it's standard procedure.
Fran cocked a hip and narrowed her smart brown eyes at the detective.
Is it?
she asked. The detective wrinkled his brow.
What? Standard procedure, she clarified. Are you taking her in so she can make a statement, or is taking her in your way of making a statement? What?
She means, Clara interjected. Is there some way Everly can do all that from here?
She's been through quite enough already, don't you think? We can go inside and pour some sweet tea, then get whatever protocols and procedures you need out of the way without worrying the girl any more than she already is.
The detective's sharp gray eyes snapped back to mine, clearly unmoved by my aunt's interruption or Clara's request.
Are you worried about talking to me? Any particular reason for that?
My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. I hadn't been worried before, but the way he looked at me implied I might want to reconsider. A woman in a ponytail and black jacket approached with a clipboard and plastic bag. Detective? He dragged his gaze begrudgingly from mine.
Yep.
She handed him the equivalent of a gallon freezer bag with a yellow label covering most of the front and something solid stuffed inside. One of my tea jars. We found this at the victim's side.
Thank you.
Detective Hayes turned the bag around in his palms and grimaced before facing the contents in my direction.
Is this yours?
He moved his attention from the tea jar in his grip to my eyes, then to the swinging sign above my front door bearing the same logo. I made a choking sound, unable to speak. He returned the bag to the woman.
Find out what was in this.
Yes, sir. She turned and disappeared into the glare of blinding spotlights erected near the crime scene. Detective Hayes pressed wide palms over narrow hips.
I'm afraid you're going to have to come with me to make that statement.
He looked at my aunts with a hint of disdain.
Then I think I'm going to have to pass on that tea.
Beside us, dozens of people scampered off, all moving double time to dispose of their tea samples in the garbage cans nearby. The women who had been holding onto my serving trays set them carefully on the ground, then walked briskly away, taking multiple backward glances before breaking into a jog. My eyes blurred once more, this time with humiliation and rage. I can't believe you just insinuated that my tea killed Mr. Payne in front of half the town. The words fell like stones off my tongue. This is my business, I cried. My livelihood and my entire life savings. How could you do that to me without any proof? The white van's headlights flashed on and the engine sparked to life. A small black logo on the rear corner identified it as property of the county coroner. Detective Hayes watched, jaw clenching and releasing, as the vehicle rolled away.
Right now, I'm more interested in why someone did that to him.
The Charm Police Station was housed in a new brick building on the bay side of town, as far from my home as any place could be without leaving the island. The station faced the mainland, with great views of the bay and the 2-mile bridge that carried travelers to and from reality. Until tonight, Charm had always seemed somewhat untouchable by the things news crews covered across the bay. We didn't have crime and corruption. Sometimes there was a bit of litter, but never anything like citizen-on-citizen violence. Detective Hayes opened the station door and held it for me to pass through. While I'd never been to the police station, I had spent more hours than I could count inside the Nature Preservation Society office next door, volunteering with Aunt Clara and Aunt Fran. They were the only two beekeepers in Charm, and they went to great lengths to educate folks on the importance of nurturing the population of our buzzy little friends. I'd made posters, passed out flyers, and tried desperately not to get stung, never giving the policemen and women next door a single thought. The building's interior wasn't what I expected. It was laid out in a similar way to the Nature Preservation Society, but it smelled like bleach and air freshener rather than dust and leaves. The white-tiled floor and pale green walls reminded me of a doctor's office, as did the uncomfortable silence. Curious eyes trailed us through the lobby, past a cop manning the front desk and a cleaning crew dusting framed photos and emptying pint-sized trash bins.
Right this way, please, Miss Swan.
The detective led me down a narrow hallway lined with office doors to a little room with a big mirror and no window.
Can I get you anything before we get started?
No. Though legal representation crossed my mind. I took a seat and avoided eye contact. My scrambled brain raced with too many thoughts, some logical and some not. Everything whirled together into a cyclone of anxiety. I wasn't sure I could answer any questions without crying. The detective produced a pad of paper and a pen and slid them in front of me.
This is for your written account.
I set one palm on the little stack of items and sniffled. Guilt twisted inside of me. Even if I wasn't a murderer, I'd been mean to an old man on a daily basis for weeks. I'd gotten the cafe I'd wanted, despite his best efforts to prevent it, and I'd still let him bait and goad me about tea ingredients. And now, he was gone.
Let's start with something simple,
Detective Hayes said, pulling a chair away from the table and seating himself opposite me. He stripped off his black windbreaker and hung it over the back of his chair. The unassuming gray t-shirt beneath seemed out of place in the sterile room.
Why did you run when I saw you earlier tonight?
The fine hairs on the back of my neck stood at attention, and I shivered. His tone and disposition spoke of something more significant than the actual words he was saying. I had no idea what that might be, but my aunts had always said I had a sixth sense about people, and I was certain Detective Hayes was about to change my life, probably for the worse.
Miss Swan,
he prodded. I lifted my aching eyes to meet his measured stare. What?
I saw you on the boardwalk earlier, approximately half an hour before receiving a call that there had been a potential homicide nearby. Imagine my surprise when I discovered the woman who'd found the victim was the same woman who'd taken one look at me and run off only minutes after the victim's estimated time of death.
My mouth opened. Words clogged my throat. I'd run from the cute guy in the moving truck because I was gross and too vain to speak to him in my sweaty condition. I didn't know you were a cop.
Then why'd you run?
I looked down at myself, and a humbling realization set in. I was still in the too tight exercise pants, still painted in sweat, probably covered in bits of marsh weeds now, and housing a swarm of gnats in my ratty hair. I dropped my face into waiting palms with a long groan.
Care to elaborate?
He asked. I rocked my head side to side. I did not.
Miss Swan,
he began again, shifting in his seat and resting his forearms on the table between us.
Is it true that you had an argument with the victim earlier today?
I raised my head and gave the detective my most pleading look. We fight every day.
Why is that exactly?
I rolled my shoulders and massaged the knotted muscles along the base of my neck, biding time and choosing my words carefully. Mr. Payne's on the town council, and he didn't want me to open my cafe. He has a thing about businesses being located inside residences. Had, I corrected myself.
And you opened anyway?
Yes. I willed my quivering lips to still. It was within my rights, but he didn't like it, so he came by every day to complain and drink free tea. His brows arched dramatically.
You didn't make the man who gave you so much trouble pay for his tea?
No.
Why? You weren't friends. He didn't even want you to have the cafe. Why would you give him free drinks?
I worked to settle my breath and folded my hands on the table. Why had I? It was the right thing to do, wasn't it? Under Detective Hayes's scrutiny, I was no longer sure. Once the cafe opened, Mr. Payne found something new to fuss about. He came around regularly to complain I didn't provide an ingredients list for customers. I thought I could get him to change his mind about the idea of the cafe if he enjoyed the product. You know, kill him with kindness. I winced at my word choice. I didn't mean that.
Which part?
I shook off the sarcastic remark. I wouldn't allow him to bait me. I figured Mr. Payne would eventually see I'm a nice person running a respectable business, making quality products that he and the town could be proud of. It wasn't like I opened a Hooters or had some grand plan to make Charm the next Hilton Head.
You don't like Hilton Head?
I rubbed my eyes, beginning to get frustrated. Hilton Head is fine, but Mr. Payne hated commercialization. That's all I'm saying. And sun, sand, and tea wasn't going to hurt his vision for the town. I thought I could win him over, show him that my cafe added to the local charm. Detective Hayes mulled that over. The silence stretched palpably between us, unraveling my already frayed nerves. I would never have hurt Mr. Payne, I pleaded, desperate to convince Detective Hayes of my truth. Even if I had wanted to, which I didn't, I wouldn't have used my tea to do it. A stunt like that would dishonor my family and completely ruin my business. I'd be lucky to sell another glass all week after Detective Big Mouth's earlier comments. Charm was a fairly superstitious town, with as many legends and tall tales as actual facts. And locals seemed to prefer the former to the latter. I gripped the table edge. I would become a campfire story, the Sweet Tea Slayer, or something equally awful. I swallowed a boulder of emotion and concentrated on Detective Hayes' blank cop expression. Think about it. No one will want my tea after this. I'll have to close my shop. I won't be able to afford to keep my house, and I've only lived there for 3 months. Panic replaced the shock and numbness in my limbs. I rubbed a circle on my chest where it was constricted with pain. I can't go back and live with my aunts again. I launched myself to my feet and paced the floor. Detective Hayes put a hand on the butt of his sidearm and pushed slightly away from the table, as if he expected me to throw myself at him over the table. His silence unnerved me, and I began to babble. My aunts are bananas. Kind, sweet, but totally batty. I just can't. I turned on him. Why would you hold up my tea jar like that and ask to have the contents tested? You implied that my tea was the murder weapon while half the town was drinking it. They're all probably on their ways to have their stomachs pumped now. A dark chuckle rolled in my throat, and I dropped back into my chair.
What?
Detective Hayes relaxed his position, apparently satisfied he wouldn't need to shoot me. Irony, I said, dropping both palms onto the table. He's finally getting what he wanted, and he won't be around to see it.
Can you think of someone else who may have had reason to hurt Mr. Payne?
No. He shot me a disbelieving look.
So everyone else in town liked him? He only had an issue with you?
Of course not. He was a cranky, crotchety old man who got on everyone's nerves. But he was one of us, part of this big weirdo family. I waved my arms around my head like a lunatic. Detective Hayes frowned. Clearly, he didn't understand. Wait until he'd been here a little longer. A new idea popped into my mind. Was that your moving truck I saw you with earlier? He dipped his chin in silent affirmation. You live here now?
That's generally what a moving truck indicates.
I was suddenly unsure how I felt about that. It's not usually like this here, I said, feeling the need to defend my town. It's usually nice, quiet. Folks get along. There's an unspoken camaraderie when you share a small space like this island. It's different than anything I've encountered anywhere else. You'll like it if you don't mind everyone in your business.
I definitely mind.
He tapped the blank paper before me with one tan finger.
I'd like a list of anyone else who you believe might have a reason to harm Mr. Payne.
Anyone else? Like, besides me? I scoffed. I just told you I couldn't have killed Mr. Payne. It's illogical and mean.
And you're always what?
He asked.
Reasonable and kind?
I try to be, I admitted. Though buying a fixer-upper home on a whim and arguing with an old man didn't support either notion. I'm not writing down a list of people for you to badger, if that's what you're asking. Talk to people. They'll tell you whatever you want to know. He cocked his head over one shoulder.
Like you're doing?
I was tired of the sarcasm. I can't tell you what I don't know. I didn't hurt Mr. Payne, and I have no idea who did. That's all I know.
Someone knocked on the door, then pushed it open. A policeman I recognized from high school gave the detective a pointed look.
Excuse me,
Detective Hayes said, rising to his feet.
Write your statement and sign it. Add the date.
He strode through the open door and vanished. He didn't come back. Eventually, I turned to the notepad and began to recount the events of my evening, logging them as neatly as I could with shaking hands. The memories as vivid and visceral as if I were reliving each awful one. Grief knotted in my throat as I described seeing Mr. Payne in the weeds, trying to wake him, thinking he might have had a stroke or heart attack or some other thing that just happened to people all the time. Then learning it was murder. The paper was stained and spotted with my tears and bleeding ink when I finished nearly an hour later. I poked my head through the open doorway, notebook clutched to my chest. Hello? The familiar officer smiled at me from his post beside the door.
All finished?
Yeah.
I held the paper out to him.
Thank you. You're free to go. Your aunts are in the lobby to drive you home, and Detective Hayes will meet you there.
I blanked. At my home?
Yes.
The officer scanned my writing, lifting the pages on the pad one by one. Judge Helix has issued a search warrant.
Images of dirty dishes and discarded undergarments race through my head. Detective Hayes was putting his hands on my things, searching for evidence that I was a killer, and probably judging my character based on the disastrous condition of my home. I turned on my heels and made a break for the lobby, half wishing I'd never left my house tonight and half wishing I could shove Detective Hayes back into that moving truck and send him home to wherever he came from.
Chapter 3. Detective Hayes was rooting through my cafe pantry when I got there. I'd passed four other men in official-looking jackets on my way up the porch stairs, who seemed to have finished whatever they were up to. Each man had a little tackle box or clipboard in his hands, and all were headed for the vehicles lining my walk.
What are you doing?
I asked, horrified, as Detective Hayes collected things from my shelves.
Finishing up.
He set the armload of items on the counter between us.
The technicians are finished, but I still have a question. What is all this?
Herbs!
I eyeballed the tins, boxes, and bags scattered before me.
Rosemary, dill, fennel. Nothing sinister there.
He lifted a finger to the narrow wall of planters opposite us, each one exploding with green leaves, shoots, and sprouts.
I thought those were herbs.
They are.
I went to the hall closet and grabbed a knee-length cardigan to wrap myself in, then pulled the tie out of my hair. I avoided the mirror and all reflective surfaces on my way back to the kitchen. Some herbs are best fresh and others are best dried. Detective Hayes had followed me, watching with careful eyes.
Some herbs can be deadly.
So could some women, but I wasn't one of them. Those, I said, pointing to the mess he'd made on my counter, are not. I use ordinary run-of-the-mill plants that won't make anyone sick, and certainly not dead.
You know which herbs can kill, though, don't you? Which to avoid? How much is safe? How much is too much?
I bit the inside of my cheeks and crossed my arms.
No answer?
Yeah, right, I said. If I admit I know those things, you'll add it to your case against me. And if I don't, then I'm a poor excuse for an organic Southern chef.
I'm not trying to build a case against you. I'm just following the evidence. Your tea led me here.
I tied the belt on my cardigan and slid behind the counter. Can I fix you something to drink? The sides of his mouth turned down.
No, thank you.
I shook my head. If you come into my cafe and rummage through the kitchen at this hour, you get tea. What kind will it be? I pointed to the menu board. I'd recommend the peach tea, but it seems to have disappeared.
We confiscated it for testing,
he said. Of course you did. I filled a jar with ice and shoved it under the pour spout of my largest tea dispenser. That's too bad. You would have liked that one. I guess you get the house special instead. Good old-fashioned sweet tea. He eyeballed the drink before lifting it to his lips.
Where are your aunts? I thought they were driving you home.
I rested a hip against the counter and sighed, admiring the quaint, beachy look of my new cafe and hating that I might be about to lose it all. I asked them to drop me off. I love them, but I can't take all the fussing tonight. This day has already been too much.
You lived with them before?
He asked. I wondered how he knew, but then I remembered my freakout at the police station, and my cheeks heated. Yeah, I grew up at the family homestead with Aunt Clara, Aunt Fran, and my grandma. And for the record, I shouldn't have been so negative earlier. My aunts aren't bananas. I'm just terrible under pressure. He lifted his gaze to mine.
Homestead?
I nodded. My family has been on the island a long time. My aunt's home and property are handed down. It was strange talking to someone in Charm who didn't already know everything about my family. Unfortunately, I wasn't sure what to share and what to keep to myself.
Got it.
Detective Hayes finally took a long sip of tea, eyes widening.
This is good.
Yeah. He examined the glass thoughtfully.
You know, my grandma used to tell me not to marry a woman until I knew how she made her sweet tea. I never understood it, but I think of it every time I have a glass.
Your grandma must have been from the South, because clearly she was a wise woman.
Charleston,
he answered, having another sip.
And she was very wise.
Is that where you're from? I leaned slightly forward, careful not to miss whatever he said next.
Originally, I lived quite a few places since then.
Is that what happened to your accent? His smile fell.
No, I worked on losing that.
He drained his glass and set it reverently aside. I felt creases gather on my forehead. Why on earth would anyone want to lose their accent? I refilled his glass and returned it to him. You know, I said, going back to his earlier question, your grandma knew that sweet tea making is personal. And if a woman trusts you with her sweet tea secrets, she's not planning on letting you go. His eyes narrowed slightly, but he didn't respond. You seem to have calmed down, I noted. Maybe my tea is drugged. His chest rose and fell in one long breath.
It's been a long day.
Do you still think I killed Mr. Payne? His pale gray eyes locked on mine for the first time since my return home.
I know you argued with him regularly, and whatever killed him could have been in your tea. That gives you both means and motive.
No, I corrected. I didn't have a motive because I don't believe there are reasons for murder. People are people. We don't have to like them all, but we can't go around killing them either. He snorted.
If only it was so simple.
He slid off my bar stool and stretched to his full height. No more questions?
Not tonight. But do me a favor and don't leave town, Miss Swan. Detective!
A portly man called from my open front door.
We're ready to go.
Detective Hayes nodded to him, then deposited a business card on the counter.
Details have changed, but the number's the same. If you think of anything, I should know.
He walked away without a goodbye and pulled the door shut behind him. I flipped the lock, then rushed back to the counter and grabbed the card. United States Marshal Service, Grady Hayes. Deputy U.S. Marshal, Criminal Investigator. U.S. Marshal? I asked the card. When it didn't respond, I turned it over, looking for more information, but found none. I ran to the front window and watched as he climbed behind the wheel of a giant black pickup truck and drove away. Who was this guy? I woke early the next morning, having fallen asleep after cleaning my entire house and taking a mental inventory of what was missing. Shockingly, everything seemed to be in its place, minus the contents of my medicine cabinet and a gallon or so of peach tea. I suppose the detective and his crew thought a killer might keep her poisons in the aspirin or cough syrup bottle, but that seems silly and a little too obvious to me. I took my time dressing and finding a mental happy place before shuffling downstairs to the cafe. I'd styled my chestnut locks in barrel curls and dashed a bit of mascara on my lashes, hoping to look as pleasant and harmless as possible for any customers who dared to visit. The vintage floral swing dress I wore was probably overkill, but I figured it wouldn't hurt. By noon, the silence in the cafe was wearing on me. Not a single soul had ventured into Sun, Sand, and Tea since I'd flipped the sign to open an hour earlier. I took my broom to the back deck and stared at the sea as I swept. Lou, the nosy gull, cocked his head and watched, but didn't offer any help. How was this happening to me? My new start had just gotten started. Words like unfair, unjust, and despicable came to mind. I threw myself onto a wooden chair and forced the angry thoughts out with the tide. The truly unfair thing was what had happened to Mr. Payne. My perspective was selfishly skewed. I wish there was a way to make things right, I told Lou, and a way to change what people think about my shop before it's too late to recover. I needed to convince people I hadn't hurt Mr. Payne. And I wished there was a way to rewind time and save him, too. But there simply wasn't. Sweat beaded on my brow, so I went back inside, frustrated. I tied an apron around my waist, then grabbed a few colorful sticks of chalk to update my menu board. Assuming no one would request the peach tea for a while, I wrote Southern Strawberry in its place. By 2 o'clock, when no customers had appeared, my heart had sunk low in my chest. I sliced cucumbers and drizzled homemade ranch dressing on top, then munched mindlessly, silently willing someone to walk through my front door. At 3 o'clock, I turned the sign from open to closed and went for a walk to clear my head. A scruffy white cat watched me from the beach until the boardwalk carried me out of sight, walking until I hit Main Street and my aunt's shop came into view. Blessed Bee was a yellow clapboard house situated between identical pink and blue houses. The pink shop sold ice cream, the blue shop books. My childhood friend Amelia owned the bookstore. I'd yet to meet the owners of the new ice cream parlor, but it was on my to-do list. Striped honeybees were stenciled over the large window at Blessed Bee, and the welcome mat had a hive on it. The interior was open and equally yellow, though paler inside than out, and featured lots of white shelves and crown molding. A sky blue ceiling ran overhead, sprinkled with fluffy white cloud shapes. Clara and Fran made everything from lip balm and face scrub to suckers and soap, all with pure organic honey drawn directly from their own hives. They'd hoped I would join them in their beekeeping adventures one day, but my near-paralyzing fear of bees had eliminated that career choice as an option. Soft, classical music played on hidden speakers throughout the store, and a smattering of shoppers gave me wayward looks as I approached the counter. I forced a tight smile and pressed the little silver service bell with one finger. Coming, Aunt Clara called from the back room. It's just me, I answered. Take your time. I'm only here to pout. Aunt Fran appeared first, a scowl on her thin, freckled face and looking ready for a tussle. Who's upset you? Clara trotted into view next, following a few steps behind her sister. She waved both hands and smiled. Everything's going to be fine, my sweet girl. Fran rounded the counter and gripped my shoulders. Just ignore those silly gossips and keep your chin up. She released me with a huff and straightened her long silk tunic. I told Clara I ought to find out who's writing those obnoxious comments and pay them a visit with an angry beehive. Before I could ask what she was talking about, Clara piped up. Nonsense, she said. This too shall pass. Things always do, I promise. She stroked my cheek and beamed. Her loose white frock and blonde gray hair flowed like one moving entity, a direct contrast to Fran's dark tunic and salt-and-pepper braid. You could see the evidence of their different fathers in their hair and facial features. Fran's was an Italian sailor, while Clara's was an Irish salesman. But they moved in tandem, almost like twins. My mother, grandmother, and I were all leaves on the sailor's branch of our family tree. Dark hair, dark eyes, olive skin, obsession with carbs. I looked more like Fran than Clara, but according to them, I'd inherited my snub nose and giant owl eyes from my dad. I could have done without both of those, though the eyes had come in handy as a teen when I'd needed to beg forgiveness for missing a curfew or dodging my daily chores. "Wait," I said. "What obnoxious comments?" "On the blog posts," Clara answered. Confusion wrinkled her brow. "They're just speculative nonsense. Don't give them a second thought." I stretched my eyes wide and asked my next question slowly, hoping to get an answer I'd understand. "What blog posts?" My aunts traded meaningful stares. Clara nodded and Fran handed me her phone. I scanned the little screen. "The Town Charmer," I read, setting my jaw. "What's this?" "Community updates, mostly," Aunt Clara said. "Local news, occasional gossip." I wrinkled my nose. "Since when does Charm have a gossip blog?" "A couple of years now," Clara said. "Everyone tries to guess who's behind it, but it's all very hush-hush, and normally the posts are incredibly helpful." I tucked that information away in my head for later and scrolled through ridiculous comments on a post about Mr. Payne's death. Seashell419 says, "Everly Swan clearly came back to Charm for nefarious reasons." "What does that even mean?" The ants rubbed my back in consolation. I flipped along, growing more agitated by the minute, utterly shocked as the speculation grew more outrageous with each message. "They're making a big deal out of the fact I want to keep the tea recipes a secret. Why is everyone so bent out of shape about this?" I groaned at the next insane reply. "This one says I won't provide an ingredients list because poison is one of the ingredients. That's completely bananas. Why would I poison my own tea and ruin myself?" Fran held out her hand and I returned her phone. "I can't believe this is happening." I checked around the store for prying ears and found the handful of shoppers had moved conspicuously closer. I fought back tears. "These people know me. They've known me all my life." I shot a pointed look at the various shoppers, mostly women I'd known since elementary school. The ladies dispersed, cell phones in their palms or pressed to their ears as they headed out the door. Clara sighed. "But you left. And while it wasn't right, people talked." "About what? Everyone leaves for college. Culinary school is the same thing." Fran rolled her eyes, clearly exasperated by the entire conversation. "Yes, but we don't leave. Swans never leave." "It's true," Clara confirmed. "Our roots are here. Jobs, family. The Swans haven't left Charm since we got here 300 years ago. She made a pained face. "When we do, people talk. It's the curse, you know."
"That's ridiculous."
I loved my family's long lineage and ties to the island, but I hated stories about our alleged curse. Swan women are cursed in love. We aren't supposed to leave the island. The men who love us will die. It was all a bunch of hooey. The stories were obviously designed to scare young women into staying where they were hundreds of years ago, when it wasn't safe to leave an established community and the quickest way out of town was with a husband. I could practically hear the mothers warning their teenage daughters. "Can't get married and leave. Swan curse says so. Better stay here where it's safe." The message to young men getting ideas about my ancestors was even worse. "Love a swan girl and you will die." No doubt an effective motivation to steer clear in a time when paranoia and superstitions ran the world.
While I appreciated the ingenuity that clearly went into forming these centuries-old safety protocols, the concepts were borderline comical in the new millennium, and got completely on my last nerve. "Lots of swans have left town," I said, repeating an argument I'd made dozens of times before.